It's always fascinating to know how the rich manage their money. But money is not always the solution to all your problems. That's why many rich entrepreneurs and business families appoint family offices to manage their wealth. A family office is a highly specialized advisory firm that gives financial planning advice to entire families that come with a large net worth and needs continuous monitoring. And it's not only investment advice. Family offices also look into how money is to be bequeathed among second and third generations to avoid any potential family disputes. Goals and aspirations of each of these family members are accounted for when the joint family finances are looked into. These could be entrepreneurs or similar high net worth individuals. Now, all of us may not be that rich, but we can surely learn some lessons from how the HNIs and the ultra HNIs manage their money. You're listening to Simply Safe Podcast, Money Control's very own personal finance podcast with me, Kaiza Adajania. In this podcast, I'm joined by Rajmohan Krishnan, who is the principal founder and managing director of Entrust Family Office. Rajmohan will share his insights and experience into the role of a family office and how family offices have become able partners for their clients and help nurture and protect their wealth. Hi Rajmohan, welcome to Simply Safe Podcast.
Thank you very much.
So Rajmohan, Entrust has been around for quite some time. You guys specialize in family office. You guys specialize in advising large families on their entire financial portfolio, income, expenses, succession planning. Financial planning is a concept that many of us are slowly getting aware of and sensitized to. But tell me, you know, how do family offices work? I mean, how is it different managing finances for an individual at a retail level as opposed to, let's say, managing finances for an entire family office?
See, India has always had a very rich history of entrepreneurism and family businesses. In fact, if you look at 90% of all companies are family owned. Okay, that's the track record of India. And if you look at some data and statistics, like if you look at the population, the ultra high net worth individual population, is about almost about 6,000 individuals who's got more than about $30 million. It works out about 200 plus crores. And if you look at these are, like, we are, India is globally ranked about 12th on the list of countries which has such wealth, okay, yeah. People with such wealth. And this is going to keep growing, okay, and it's going to grow at a very whopping about, I would say about 65 to 70%. Okay, in the next 5 years. Okay, so that means that we are talking about almost 11,000, 12,000 people by 2024, and which makes it second largest wealth hub in Asia, okay, after China, which will outperform Europe too. So that's the kind of data we are talking about. And when you have such wealthy individuals, definitely there is a need for family offices to exist. And if you look at it in a very simple form, if you want to probably understand family office, it's a private office for a family, okay, with considerable wealth, whatever money they have. And it spans across various services which one offers, meaning in terms of course, wealth management and investment advisory, all these are bread and butter businesses, bread and butter services which we offer. Apart from that, you have managing the corporate, if suppose the family has got a business, then corporate governance and basically, coming back and setting up the family constitution, the business constitution. These are some of the issues which a family office takes care. And of course, very, very important is the estate planning bit, where you set up family trusts and you set up boards from the family to maintain, to manage the trust. And if you look at historically, most of the Indian families has huge real estate holdings. So that means that, and across geographies, if you look at India and today, you look at people who own real estate even outside India. And so that means that you need the family office to take care of this real estate too. And some could be rental yielding, some could be just locked up, some could be used. So very, very overwhelming kind of a work which the family needs the family offices to do, to take care of it.
And you're a multi-family office. So many families you would be managing, and in the entire families, and it will go from generation to generation. So for example, if let's say you're talking about entrepreneurship, so one entrepreneur would be there, and if he wants to then retire and divide the business for his more than one children, then you will help in succession planning. And
so let me give you an example. In fact, today we had a call. It's an old business family in Bangalore. In fact, it's about the second generation, probably the third generation.
Okay.
And they are into family business. And it's all completely, not in the right shape, because this is completely old school, because they have HUFs and they don't have family trust. It's not managed properly. And the current generation has felt the need of engaging with somebody like us to understand how these HUFs can be wound up and what can be done in terms of to transition these assets into trusts and maybe write wills for some of their family members and manage it very effectively in terms of both the business as well as the personal assets can be managed. So typically what happens is when you look at the newer generation which are emerging from the families, they are very interested to probably clean up all that whatever has happened over the period of couple of generations and make it very clean so that what they the legacy which they carry forward to the next generation is much more cleaner than what it used to be earlier. And family offices play a very, very key role in this, in terms of advising, in terms of handholding them through this process.
Okay. Given us, you know, behind the scenes of how family offices work, you know, are there too many family offices such as yourselves in India? Is your tribe also, is it growing? Has it grown over a period of time?
Of course, there are single family offices. There are many single family offices. Primary thing is when do you need a single family office is when it works economics only when you have more than about 2,500 crores of assets in terms of, and that is when you can have your own team and manage
affairs. Yeah, because you have to pay them salaries also, then they are your employees, as in they are company's employees. So it has to be feasible.
It is not just employee. You'll have to have a CEO. You'll have to have various vertical heads. You'll have to have somebody for real estate. You need to have your own lawyer, at least internally, to check all the contracts, everything.
And compliance also. Compliance is also a big thing. I mean, you have to make sure that, you know, they're managing your wealth in the right possible way.
And more than that, when you have 2,500, 3,000 crores, then you have your own research people. You have your own fund managers to manage. And of course, you will have people who manage private equity. You will manage, listed equities. So it's a very large team. So basically, all people will not, go into that segment, because this becomes like when you exit a business or when you have so much of surplus to manage. And some point of time, you want to enjoy your life, right?
Yeah.
So basically, you don't want to again run another company, okay? Because when you have so many people working for you, you'll have to keep motivating them. You'll have to keep incentivizing them. It's not easy at all. But still, there are a lot of families who have taken this route of setting up a single family office. But anything less than that, I would say that they need multi-family offices to manage. But if you look at the situation in India, is like this. You very, very few blue-blooded family offices exist. Okay. In fact, most of the family office services today offered by some corporates, some are offered for some large institutions. These are not real family offices, because typically there is a pressure in terms of numbers, the number of clients, because you can't handle more than a certain amount of clients in this model. Because it is a very exhaustive, very deep,
absolutely
deep engagement model. Family expects you to do everything, go to any extent. Like, for example, we have helped clients shift their homes.
Okay.
We have helped clients manage the entire interior decor of the house, maintenance of the house when they are outside India or when they are outside the house. We take control of the house. We do. So there's a lot of activity which is involved for a family office. I don't think institutions have got the, I'm sure they're capable, but the only thing is, I'm sure they wouldn't want to do all this because they have other responsibilities to do, because either these are run by large banks, large institutions, too many people, manpower. So I think these can be always boutique firms who handle a handful of clients or more, and give them exemplary service to take care of all their affairs. Okay. To answer your question, not many family offices exist. Of course, people call themselves family office, but very few. In India, I would say 2 or 3 real blue-blooded family offices are there.
Okay. Rajbhan, one of the things that we notice from an HNI's portfolio, high net worth individual's portfolio, be a client of a family office or may not be a client of a family office directly, but a typical HNI would have, because of the wealth that they have, they would have their money spread across many investments and many asset classes. Equity and debt obviously is there, but you will have commodities, gold, metals, international diversification also. International diversification, international stocks and funds have also gained a lot of popularity among the mass affluent investors also in the last 1.5 years or so. How important is international diversification for investors? What can the mass affluent learn from, you know, the sort of diversification that typical HNI would have? And I'll get to the negativities also a little later, but let's start with the positive.
See, as we learn from the saying, don't put all eggs into one basket, I'm sure that it's very, very prudent to diversify across geographies because the world is flat. Because you know what's happening in the US affects India, what's happening in Europe affects India. Like, for example, last couple of days, there have been talks of the second wave, which is hitting Europe and France, and people are, France government has announced second lockdown. And these are having ripple effects in the markets. And you have the US elections coming in. The stimulus is being taken back. It's going to come back only in January under the new president. So these are some of the things which impacts the market. So today, if you look at, clearly, world is flat and you need to diversify geographies in terms of investments. And that will help in terms of, it will be a huge hedge against your currency and also in terms of vulnerabilities of economies. Like, for example, if you look at India, if the economies are not doing well and like you feel saying that it's going to be a recession for the next couple of years, I'm just hypothetically saying this, but what happens is, of course, if US is doing well, you can diversify your investments in US, you can invest in Vietnam, you can invest in Bangladesh. In fact, some people invest in Sri Lanka. So there's a lot of, apart from Asia, there are other markets which are doing well.
Brazil, opportunities. Yeah, opportunities are there.
Yes, these are some of the opportunities which can be utilized. Yeah. And of course, what happens is today, HNI's kids, most of them want to study abroad. Okay, and they go internationally to study, in various universities. So when you diversify, it comes handy also when the kids need this for paying fees or probably taking care of their accommodation or for expenses or something like that. It adds a kind of a huge kicker when you have internationally diversified portfolios. So I'm sure that it is very important. But of course, in terms of when amongst HNIs, they have multiple wealth managers managing their portfolios. So basically what happens is each of these wealth managers work in isolation, and we have seen this because when you have five people will offer different kind of products. It could be overlap of some stocks, it's overlap of some structures. So it is critically, you need a family office on an over-the-top basis to look at the entire asset allocation and to understand the risk of the portfolio, whether it's over-diversified, how many products are there, is the risk is mitigated in terms of some kind of the diversification. These are some of the things which only a family office can do.
Rajbhan, you said, family offices also help in ensuring, among other things, that, you know, over-diversification is avoided. But this is one thing that we've noticed in many HNI portfolios is that because there is money available to invest, and at that level, probably you might, you know, want to take a little bit more risk because you know that you can afford to take that risk. Okay, but as a result of which, the portfolio can obviously get very over-diversified also, right? I mean, you want to have everything, not just a plain vanilla equity fund or a plain vanilla debt fund would do. You want to have this, you want to have that, and also structured products also. You mentioned about structured products a little earlier. So can over-diversification also hurt an investor's portfolio? I mean, is there something that we can learn from looking at an HNI's portfolio as to how over-diversification can sometimes kill or make a mess of the portfolio?
Of course, definitely. In fact, one of the key factors in terms of investment advisory as a family office is we look at diversification. Okay, diversification is very important, but over-diversification kills the returns, as well as too many components of the portfolio, like too many products, or too many instruments kills the returns and basically become extremely suboptimal in terms of performance and leading to ultimately disappointment. Because see, law of diminishing marginal utility works everywhere, meaning more and more products and more diversification is not going to help. And risk taking doesn't mean over diversification. Risk taking meaning understanding the risk in a particular instrument and betting on that. Okay, I'm sure that there is risk involved in betting on certain instruments, but calculated risk, which the advisor, helps you understand, that is where the money has to go. And definitely, in my experience, over diversification is something which completely damages the portfolio.
Okay. One more investment avenue that we find a lot of wealthy Indians are looking at these days and for the past few months also has been startups. So where do family offices, where do they help them in this scenario?
See, actually, if you look at this space, is very interesting and it is gaining a lot of importance and traction. Yeah. And of course, families are looking at diversifying into made seed funding or venture funding or going to a kind of an advanced stage in terms of probably cutting larger checks in terms of private equity. This is something which is happening. But if you look at, not every family can take that kind of a risk, because if you look at, more than 90% of the startups don't see the light of the day. Okay, you will end up, only I would say 5 to 10% does well. And so that means that selection of companies, selection of promoters, selection of the concept and also the opportunity lying ahead is very, very important. And you need experts to understand this area very well. You can't just go by saying that, hey, I am getting opportunities. My friend is coming and asking me for some money. Yeah. In fact, I find it interesting. I know this guy. Can I invest? I don't think that's the way a startup investing can be made. Of course, promoters make a huge difference for the success of startups. But at the same time, the concept, the proof of concept, acceptability in the market, what is the scope? These are some of the things which is always one needs to probably evaluate before even getting into this kind of a scenario.
Do you help them to evaluate in your scheme of things? Okay.
Of course, we have a team which is specialized into private equity and startup investing. In fact, we do the full circle of a full cycle of investing, starting from identifying the opportunities, doing diligence on the company, and doing the paperwork once and of course negotiating on the pricing in terms of the pricing of the investment, the valuation, when the people call it. And once the valuation is ascertained, then get into the financial transaction, basically consummation of transaction by legal diligence, and also the term sheet and the shareholders agreement, everything we do. So we have an entire team, in fact, starting from a research team to legal team, and to take care of this.
Fascinating, Amiku, because there's so much of attention now on investing in startups. So obviously, I'm sure you'll have lots of work to do in that area as time goes by.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The other aspect that financial advisors, planners talk about when they talk about how the rich manage their money and how the rich invests their money. One aspect about their financial planning is also about, retirement may not be strictly, about all family offices, but some people might say that, because they've accumulated a lot of wealth over a period of time, they want to sort of take a back seat and do something more meaningful, probably with their lives, perhaps helping out in the social sector and basically retiring early to do something that they've always wanted to do all their lives but didn't quite find the time. Now, early retirement is a luxury that not many people can afford. What is it that, but obviously, as the years go by, more and more young generation are also coming to terms with the fact that, they would also want to retire at 50, probably 52, and then working on their own or doing something on their own, which they've always wanted to do. But, at an early age, they couldn't think that they can sustain themselves. So retiring early as a goal, what is it that the mass affluent can learn from HNIs and ultra HNIs?
If you look at mass affluent as a section, as a sector, you definitely, I think they need to understand saying that how much do they need for them to hang up their boots and what is the kind of lifestyle they want to maintain after they retire. And that's something which is very, very important. And when you are retiring and when you're, and I know people who have retired at 35 and 40 because they made reasonably good monies and they believe that that is good enough for them to sustain their lifestyle, probably which includes probably a few international holidays a year, accommodating their children for educating abroad, and also to for medical emergencies, and reasonably invested into real estate for living, or probably one or two properties, some holiday destinations, maybe like for example in the south people have a lot of houses in Kunur, and or Bangalore is hop, skip and jump is Coorg, so people own some estates. Chikmagalur, north of course people own in the hills, so that's a way people want to settle down. So we what we advocate with people is the most important thing is how much do they think they need for a kind of a comfortable lifestyle. So that means that we need to calculate, we need to work on the Excel sheet to understand what is the kind of lifestyle they have, what is the kind of expenses they can forecast, like for example, kids' education, marriage, property buying, or what is the kind of international, whether they have an insurance, medical insurance to cover, even traveling internationally for treatments, all that gets covered into the financial planning. And of course, what is the kind of surpluses they have, whether they're going to get any future surpluses from some of their investments, all that get factored. And once you have, what we typically do try and do is, we always tell people saying that for your day-to-day expenses, for like, for example, typically somebody needs about 50 lakhs to a crore per annum in terms of to sustain a reasonably good lifestyle, which they want to do, which they want to have, and then put that kind of a sum. I'm talking about corpus, which can generate 50 lakhs to a crore, gets completely bifurcated and invested into something very, very safe and secure kind of an instruments. Like, for example, earlier days, I'm talking about 3-4 years back, you had great tax-free bonds.
Yeah,
coming from NHAI and REC and some of the sovereign institutions. And we locked in quite a bit of money into these so that every year they get some kind of a money for their expenses. And the rest they can actually invest into growth companies, whether it's equities, whether it's private equity, if they want to invest in real estate, which is mostly illiquid, or some rental yielding properties or something like that. So typically what we do is we draw out a financial plan and we take down into all these considerations. Like for example, last 2-3 years, markets have not done well at all. So one needs to take stock. If suppose there is a huge market downturn and if you don't see markets going up and market not making any great returns. So that is one. Number two is in these days, people live longer because of advanced medical facilities.
Yeah, that's true. And
lifestyle changes. So one needs to plan for all that. Like for example, if you're going to live up till 75, 80, then what do you do? And that is where what happens is 80, if you're living 80 and you need to live healthily. Okay, if you're not healthy, then the next, you need to create succession. Okay, that comes next. So really, in fact, all these goes into the advice when we talk about retiring early. And typically, we provide completely impartial advice and recommendations. Like for example, in terms of, we don't provide our own financial products. In fact, we are completely independent and a fee-based advisor. So we go to the entire market, scan all the opportunities, find out what best suited for clients and make sure that he's taken care, his risk is mitigated and sustainable income is created for him over a long period of time. And of course, taxes, like for example, that is something which I forgot. Like you don't know what is the tax regime is going to be in the next 5 years.
Okay.
Or like whether you'll have estate duty. You need to plan everything today. Okay. You can't decide saying that I need so much only and finally end up probably paying a huge estate duty 5 years later. And what happens to that? So it's a very, very tricky situation. A family office has financial planners who works very, very intensively on this and make sure that the family is taken care of from all these risks and unforeseen circumstances going forward.
Okay. succession planning, how important is it for a family office?
See, more than the family office, I would put it this way. Succession planning is very, very important for every ultra high net worth client. Okay. In fact, people ask me saying that, hey, what do you think is the quantum of money one needs to have when somebody should think of succession? I really feel saying that the quantum is not important. Important is whether you want to create a hassle-free succession for your legal heirs going forward.
That's very true. And that's also why we also say that, you know, succession planning is important for everyone. I mean, we all have to, whether you are a high net worth individual or even if you are in the middle class, but, you know, you need to ensure that your money passes on to the right person after you are gone.
Yes. And one more thing is, today it's very, though we spoke about longevity and people living longer and things like that, but, you know, things are not honky-dory, meaning you see people passing away suddenly and like people leaving this world all of a sudden, meaning in terms of without any planning, not thinking about the future. Because always we plan, we hope for better tomorrows and we think saying that, yes, we can do this tomorrow. But there is no tomorrow, according to me. It's today. Today is what is the most important day, because tomorrow is nobody knows. Okay, and we keep insisting that to clients when we meet, saying that it's very, very important to pass on the baton without any confusion to, the next generation. And unless and until you, the mode of succession is not well defined, and more often than not, we have to keep seeing a lot of issues amongst us. I don't want to name families, but we know saying that a lot of families come into the limelight, because they've not done their succession planning effectively. And it's all taken for granted and relegated to the backseat and creating all this confusion. And of course, what is happening is transition and succession requires family emotions, meaning in terms of its values, goals, the business needs. Like, for example, there is a family. Okay, there are kids. Okay, now you need to find out saying that whether one kid is interested in the business, the other kid is not interested in the business. What will the other kid do? How are you going to manage them?
Yeah, so you have to manage all these. Are all very complex situations, no,
Rajma? And people can get, it's a very tricky, and people can get very annoyed or even upset if you don't think about all this. Because see, finally, they don't come out and talk, but all of them will be looking at the head of the family and expecting him to act properly. Okay, they may not come back and tell you saying that, hey, have you considered this? Okay, but the head of the family. So what happens is the family office acts as like a counsel, like a confidant to the family head, and tells them these are the possible scenarios. These are the possibilities which one needs to have. You need to be completely cognizant of what can happen tomorrow. Like, for example, the kind of divorces which happens these days. Okay, you with all good hopes, the people get married. And finally, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years later, and you see divorce is happening even at late 50s and late 60s. Mm. Okay, you never know what is going to be the lifespan of a marriage.
Yeah.
And what do we do? How do you protect yourself from some kind of an issue tomorrow in terms of succession, in terms of settlement? So I think it's very, very critical that succession planning is extremely important. Now, the next point is like, okay, you have money, you have your relatives, you have everybody, you have not done your succession planning properly. What happens if you become incapacitated?
You have to plan for that as well.
Absolutely. And you can't sign your check. You can't go to the bank. Like, for example, there are a lot of people who get into dementia. Mm. They forget what is happening. So how do you plan for it? And how do you protect your business from business risks? Like today, if you look at most of the people invest into startups, they become global CEOs of companies. What happens if suppose a case is slapped against you and you end up, coughing up a lot of money to settle some of these cases.
Yeah.
So how do you protect your family from all these eventualities? Unless you have a clear succession plan, you ring fence assets so that tomorrow something happens, your family doesn't suffer. Very, very complicated stuff. I think every individual will have to think and don't procrastinate. Don't think saying that, okay, let us do it tomorrow, let us day after. I think this is something which is not postponable. This is something which you can't procrastinate. I think it's very, very important that we need to do it then and there. And that's what we advocate to the family. And of course, you have celebrities, you have NRIs, you have a lot of complexities like kids abroad, What do you do? Like, for example, they are in a different jurisdiction. People are in the US. And how do you then settle your assets because you have double taxation? There are a lot of complexities, even when you're talking about estate planning. And so unless you have an expert, like, for example, we sit together, we have done many cases like special children. I wanted to mention this. Like, there are a lot of families which has got special children, differently abled. Okay, now who's going to take care of the kid after your time? Okay, unless you set up a trust, set up a vehicle which can take care of their expenses, if they live longer, if they live probably the next 40 years, 30 years, they need to be taken care.
So many scenarios can crop up, right? I mean, there are so many possibilities. You've just mentioned like about half a dozen possibilities over here only.
And will is not the answer for everything, because will kicks off only after you kick your bucket. And till such time you're alive, you want to see succession happening very smoothly. Like, for example, in the case of, I was just talking about special children. Like, unless and until you know, saying that there is a structure, when you're alive, you put together a structure, you ensure saying that there is a money which has already been, what do you say, put together in the structure so that the kid is taken care for the future. A will not help at all. What happens tomorrow? You're not there.
Yeah.
Who's going to take the child? So it's a very, very important. And particularly when you have companies, like you have large enterprises, you have all your life, your hard-earned money is put together in the, in a firm. And what if you have not settled that into a trust and tomorrow you pass away? So who's going to manage? Who's going to, there could be many children. Your wife will be there, your surviving wife. You could be having multiple children. Who's going to take care of the business? Have you specified? Like, for example, who's going to own the shares? Whether voting rights, who's going to have the voting rights? There are a lot of complications.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
And lastly, clearly very important, what happens is when you set up a trust, a corporate trustee is very important. Tomorrow, like for example, today, if you see, there are a lot of families, they don't depend too much on the relatives. Okay, they believe that completely a third party is a right, what do you say, person to, in terms of, like for example, a corporate like us who offers trusteeship services is somebody who can actually take care of the family trust and ensure saying that the succession is done very, very smoothly. Or when you have a will, okay, executor of the will, like people don't not anymore, like people depend on their relatives, or they don't want to burden them with these responsibilities. They're saying,
So you have to plan for them, you know, yourself, rather than just leaving it to chance, leaving it to, as you said rightly, you know, to your family members who you may not want to depend on. Yeah.
We'll have to give them a lot of scenarios.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk about do's and don'ts. We'll have to talk about various scenarios which can transpire and how they need to plan. So it's a very long drawn process. It's a kind of discussion which can span anywhere between 3 to 6
months,
you set up family trust or something like that, because so many things crop up.
True. Thank you so much, Rajmohan, for your views.
Thank you very much. And it was very, very informative. The questions were very relevant. And I'm sure people listening to this will get a point or two which can get take home and probably ponder over.
That's all for today's podcast. If you have any feedback to share, do write in to us at mcpodcast@mw18.com. I repeat, it's mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, log on to moneycontrol.com.